south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. All right, before I get into a very cool boots on the ground story, this email from Nelson. He says, "Bravo, Johnny, on all your truth-telling and your conservative down-to-earth, witty approach to things. I'm a longtime student of expatriation myself and have many friends who've escaped the United States for Chile, Uruguay, Panama, etc." Then he says, "Please send me the link to info on gold and silver you mentioned at about 11:35 minutes into your show number 605 while showing an IRS form 8300. Also, he says, "Do you have an opinion on Jamaica? A friend here says it's wonderful and wants to show me around on his next visit." Then he says, "My mother thanks you, my father thanks you, my brother thanks you, my sister thanks you, and my parole officer thanks you." Actually, he didn't say that. Jimmy Cagney said that in Yankee Doodle Dandy. But Nelson actually typed out three capitalized thank yous in a row. Well, thanks for that, Nelson. Okay, and in response, I have to say that you're asking me to send you some link from show 604, and I'm on show 668 now, I think. Well, we're talking over 50 shows ago. All right, as Ricky Ricardo might say, let me explain something to you. To all you listeners, actually. Once in a while on the show, I'll say there's some kind of link or free report that I'll send to you, but you guys have to act fast on that. At least within a couple of weeks of the time the broadcast goes out. Because, you know, this might sound strange, but after I do a show, I never listen to it again. Ever. Well, not ever. Sometimes someone says, "You go back and listen to show number so-and-so because you insulted someone or said the F word." Anyway, it has to be someone pointing out something weird like that for me to go back and check. Meaning if I do offer a report or a book or a link or something like that, you kind of have to jump on it within a couple of weeks while my memory's still fresh, you know? But there is a solution coming to that. In fact, I just had a meeting the other day with a couple of IT movers and shakers and such, and I know I've been promising for a long time that they'll finally be some kind of keyword search for all my shows. Like I said, I've got around 660 something. That means back to back over 300 hours of my babbling. And because there are so many hours of content, people are constantly emailing me saying things like, "Wouldn't it be nice if, for example, I could type in the word Belize and pull up every time you mention Belize on one of your shows? Wow, don't you know that would be great? It would be more than great. It would be extra cool." And I've had a half a dozen people offer to go through all my shows and punch in the keywords and come up with a gigantic list like that. But so far, everyone seems to have pooped out at around show 200 or so. But there is life at the end of the tunnel. Did I say life? I meant light and life, I guess. Hope so, anyway. After my July 2017 seminar, which kicks off in about a month from now, I'm seriously thinking of setting up a membership site. And along with that membership, looks like I might be posting every single one of those 660-some shows. Also thinking about possibly transcribing every single one of them, too. And if that happens, you can read them and pick them apart and do keyword searches right from those Word or PDF documents in whatever format they come out in. Because you see, if I get them all transcribed, then no one has to go through the drudgery of listening to every show and picking out the keywords. You can just pick your own keywords and do a search. Anyway, all that's in the works because I do get a lot of emails from people mentioning past shows that I have no idea I even did. God, I hope that Alzheimer's cure comes pretty soon. Anyway, just to let you know, I'm working on it and that a possible membership site's coming soon. Think about it. Wouldn't that be nice, being able to plug in a word like Nicaragua or Belize or cosmetic surgery, residency, driver's licenses, even the retired Ashians, and be able to search all the related shows and have instant access. All right, just to give you a little preview of what's to come there. And Nelson mentions at the end of his email, "Wonderful Jamaica." Yes, Jamaica. I never recommend Jamaica except for a nice package all-inclusive deal. It's a very, very dangerous place. I've been there a number of times. Of course, it has a very cool history. Errol Flynn used to live there, and so did many old Hollywood and Broadway greats in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. for example, Ian Fleming, who created James Bond, and Noel Coward, who wrote all those tremendous Broadway plays, and the island's most favorite son, Bob Marley, of course. Now, I went down there and took the Bob Marley tour and got the biggest runaround of my life. I'm telling you, once you leave your beautiful, gated, guarded, all-inclusive hotel complex, man, you just better dress way down and hold on to your wallet. Seems like everyone's out to take you. Remember, Jamaica's one of the very first Caribbean islands that became a tourist destination, starting way back in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. So the natives are very adept at skinning foreigners, especially gringos. By the way, if you go on the Bob Marley tour and visit his house and studio, you'll see the neighborhood's a real dump and quite scary looking. Not to mention, everyone, and I mean everyone's got their hand out. On top of that, I've never seen such a diminished personal space problem. I mean, everywhere you go, people are rubbing against you, bumping into you. Most of the time to see if you got anything that's not tied down on your person so they can snatch it. And all the taxi drivers will try to scam you. They've all got a brother or brother-in-law who owns a restaurant they want to take you to instead of the one you really want to go to. But when, unless you're hanging around close by your hotel or resort, you don't want to get in a taxi at night. For that matter, you don't want to walk around unless you're in a big crowd at night either. Oh, there are some very cool natural and ecologic sights to see. Waterfalls, jungle, pristine wading pools. But they've got that almost everywhere else in the Caribbean and Latin America too. So why do people go to Jamaica then? Well, because it's solidly on the tourist trail and everyone speaks English. Same reason they go to Belize. Well, isn't that convenient? By the way, it's the home of reggae music. Being a longtime B-grade musician myself and having spent some time in recording studios with some well-known recording artists who I won't mention right now, seems like all the ones I've ever spoken to have made the trek down to Jamaica because it's the mystical, magical home of reggae. Specifically, Kingston and Trenchtown. Both places, dangerous dumps, only really put on the map because Bob Marley talked about them in interviews and sang about them in songs. And Trenchtown is an absolute slum, but Bob Marley's old stomping grounds. Even so, Trenchtown is a must-see destination for musical first-worlders on a reggae pilgrimage. In fact, a while back when I visited the place myself, I ran into a couple of rock and rollers and some rap and hip-hop guys from New York. By the way, I generally don't use the words music or musician in the same sentence as rap and hip-hop. Anyway, every musician I've ever spoken to who's made that trek down to Jamaica, they have plenty to say when they get back home and it ain't good. And you know, a lot of first world musicians go down there to record in those same studios that Marley used, trying to suck up some of that classic reggae vibe right from the source. And they all pretty much say the same thing. They meet some very good musicians and very likable Jamaicans and they always get ripped off. Some of them have even had tens of thousands of dollars worth of recording equipment and musical instruments stolen right out from under them. That even happened to Paul McCartney. No respect, huh? So how's that happen? Well, musicians who've kind of made it, especially ones with an entourage, leave everything to their managers and handlers. And the musicians themselves, they're notorious for inviting people they don't know right into the studio. Not to mention they hang and go bar and house hopping with people they just met too. And believe me, in a place like Jamaica, that's a very bad move. So musicians always want to make that trip to the reggae Mecca. And they all come back talking about what a great musical experience it was, aside from all the lies and the BS and the petty theft. Oh, and not to mention, I know a couple of guys from the Garment District in New York who ran maquilas in Jamaica. They tell exactly the same stories. In fact, one of them told me he had to hire guards to watch the guards at his factories. Because he said, if you don't, everything starts disappearing. So, Nelson, there's my opinion of Jamaica. I've been there. It's a nice place to take a vacation or stop for a day on a cruise, but that's about it. Of course, there's probably a lot of other expat gringos and such. You've had good, even great experiences in Jamaica. Of course, I haven't heard any of those stories, but I'm sure they're out there. All right, since we're hitting emails here, let me finish up another couple of them. This one's from the Altiplano Drifter. He says, hey, Johnny, just heard your latest show. Was a small novel, but you're a good reader. Ever think about teaching English to the little brown people? All right, it's me, Johnny. Well, in a word, no. Although I have great respect for good teachers, I've had a few in my day, I have absolutely zero patience for kids, which is why it takes a lot for me to keep my mouth shut in restaurants when idiot wealthy Latins bring in their entitled kids and they're running around all over the place, raising their voices and demanding attention from their parents and everyone else in the place. Sound familiar? Now, other Latins who are dining would never think of reprimanding a kid like that. Because here in Latin America, we have a nice, reserved, non-confrontational culture, you know. But not me. I can be confrontational, and sometimes I do let them have it. And man, let me tell you, that's when the parents really crack the whip on those kids. I mean, come on, having your kids shushed and reprimanded in a restaurant by a gringo? Man, that's embarrassing. Not for me, for them. And you know what? Every time I've done that, the rest of the patrons in the restaurant kind of give me the nod, you know. Good work, gringo. Wish I'd have done that. But unfortunately, you see, restaurants here in Latin America are only frequented by people with a little bit of money. And that means, surely, they have maids and nannies, and their kids are, more often than not, entitled princes and princesses. And for some reason, parents like to drag them to restaurants along with the maid and the nanny. That way, just like at home, the parents don't have to deal with it. I can't tell you how many times I've been in a nice restaurant and the entourage comes in. Of course, there's a bodyguard in the parking lot, too. Mom and dad dress just like first world gringos, followed by a couple of loud, disruptive youngsters with expensive gadgets, even iPhones, followed by the maid and the nanny, who are easy to spot because they're wearing their colorful indigenous outfits. I mean, come on, talk about a totally unnecessary display of the class system. That's life at the high end in Latin America, so get used to it. But back to the Altiplano Drifter's email. He says, Johnny, why have you not chosen to have a seminar with, say, 50 people or more? All right, it's me, Johnny, again. Well, I've found that if you have more than 25 people, it's not personalized enough, nor very mobile. Of course, with a smaller group, we all become friends and have a much tighter connection than, let's say, if we had 50 people or more. Just think of those international living seminars where they've got a couple of hundred people. Seems like everyone who's ever gone to one of those has told me they were disappointed. All right, about the seminar. Since this show is going out on June 4th, you've got a little over a month to sign up for my July seminar. Just go to www.thenewexpat.com and click on Johnny's seminar link. And since we're a little over a month away, you can still easily get all your paperwork done if you want to apply for Guatemalan temporary or permanent residency at the very same time you're down for the seminar. It takes about a month on the outside to get the necessary paperwork together up in your state to start the residency application process down here. While you're at thenewexpat.com checking out the seminar link, you'll see information about those famous John Galt pre- and post-seminar trips. I always highly recommend them, even more so if you're thinking about doing business in Latin America. I guarantee you, after you've taken one or both of those trips, you'll have way too many business ideas. Now, if you can't get boots on the ground or come to my seminar, you really need to take my Expat Essentials course. You get your three free introductory videos to the 9-hour course by going to www.expatplanb.com. And don't forget the triple dub preface, or you might not get there. So by all means, check out my Expat Essentials course. Don't reinvent the wheel. Get a game plan and a blueprint for your own plan B with my Expat Essentials course. Oh, and by the way, a lot of people are doing one-on-one phone consultations with me. So if you're stuck and need some personal guidance with your own plan B, just download my phone consultation form at www.thenewexpat.com. Fill it out, send it back, and we'll Skype or get on the phone and work things out. By the way, I suggest all you listeners download that consultation form because there are questions and talking points on it you just may not have been thinking about or considered before. Check it out. Download it. There's no obligation to do a phone call, but you will find what it says very interesting. Oh, and I've mentioned on this show and previous shows that on the outside, it takes about a month to get the paperwork necessary to start the permanent or temporary residency process in Guatemala or pretty much any Latin country. But some gringos and expats have actually gotten the whole process done in a day, even within a couple of hours. Listen to this. This comes from Kiefer, who's coming to the July seminar and is getting his residency paperwork processed as we speak. He says, Johnny, you won't believe this. You're talking about how it could take a month to get all your paperwork done here in the States. Well, I just did it. I found out that Tucson, Arizona, for sure, must be the easiest place in the whole USA to do it. I still can't believe it. For one thing, all of the offices I had to go to are located within walking distance. And the police station, where I had to go for my police good conduct report, is two blocks south of the downtown library, and the Secretary of State's office to get the documents authorized and certified is only three blocks west of the library. Best of all, the Guatemalan consulate office, where the paperwork finally has to get stamped, is right across the street from the library on the seventh floor of a business building. Since it's a small office, the people in there are very nice and it's not very busy at all. I just walked in and got my paperwork done within 15 minutes. So the whole thing took one day. Heck, I could surely have done it in a half a day. So I'm done and I'll be in Guatemala in July. All right, meet Johnny again. You see, some people can get all that stuff done in a half a day or a day, while others it takes a month. So I'll remind you again that you've got a nice 1 month long window of opportunity if you're planning on getting your residency and coming to the seminar at the same time. All right, let's finish up that email from the Altiplano Drifter. He says, Johnny, a question. Might you say that 80% of the real food in those big markets in places like Guatemala City, Antigua, and surrounding areas, I might add in most all of Latin America, come from local growers? Not, of course, including American junk food that the trucks bring in. Would you guess that a large percentage is mostly organic or mostly covered in Monsanto poisons, etc.? Well, it's me, Johnny, Mr. Drifter. I mentioned this in a couple of past shows. Almost all of the produce you see at those big Latin markets is coming in from small and medium-sized truck farms within about a 20 to 30-mile radius. Now, you do see more and more produce coming in on big trucks shipped in from other Latin American countries, for example, Chile. They're starting to send a lot of perfectly formed oranges and apples, like the ones consumers insist on having up in the States. You know, the ones that look good, picture perfect, and taste like cardboard. Now, I've found that oftentimes the uglier the fruit is on the outside, the tastier it is on the inside. And that's the stuff that gets sold in these big markets. In fact, you should see some of these amazing giant tangerines that show up in the market about 4 months out of the year. They truly look like they're covered with horrible tumors, but inside, they're an amazing bright orange and perfect, and the taste, well, beyond belief. Believe me, they're never going to find an outside market for those things. They're just too damn ugly for prime time, which is perfectly okay with me. When they're in season, I buy them 50 at a time. And you can peel one in 10 seconds with just your little finger. No undue pressure or utensils needed at all. In fact, many years ago, when I first saw these things being sold in the market, I looked at them and thought, people eat these things? Until my cleaning lady, no less, urged me to try one. And man, that was it. I'm hooked on those things. For those of you watching this on YouTube, I hope I can get a picture of one of those malignant-looking things up there for you. But back to Mr. Drifter's question about Monsanto and toxins in the food here. It's true the locals with the small and medium truck farms do use fertilizer, though most of them still rely on what they call good old abono. That would be what's colloquially known as chicken poop. So when you walk into an agricultural store out in the boonies, tiendas called agropecarios, they'll have the usual nitrogen-based fertilizers, even some of that crap Monsanto stuff, or more likely a crap generic clone of Monsanto junk. But they'll also have giant 50 and 100-pound sacks of chicken poop. And the truth is, the people with the small farms and the truck farmers kind of just eke out a living. You can tell by the beat-up trucks they have and the clothes they wear and the shacks they live in. Yep, by our standards, they're poor, but they eat well. Like expat Eddie always says, do you expect these guys to shell out good dough to buy a sack of first-world-priced Monsanto crap? The fact is, they'll do everything and anything to go natural and avoid buying that junk. Now, of course, they'd use it if they got it for free. Hey, you know the Latin mentality, if it's from the first world, it must be good, right? Because they don't know any better, but man, it costs first world dough. Hey, and I'm not saying it doesn't happen at all. I mean, you see it in the store, so somebody must be using it. But if you notice, it occupies a very small place on the shelves, which should tell you a lot. And really, through the grapevine, you find out that it's only around election time that people get sacks of free fertilizer and stuff. That's when local farmers win the lottery, courtesy of the political party that's stamped all over it, who, by the way, got it for free from idiot first-world do-gooders and NGOs. So what I'm saying is the big markets are loaded with mostly local produce. Though not long ago, I was in a big market and I saw something that kind of scared me. right alongside the local garlic bulb sellers. There were people selling Chinese garlic bulbs, complete with Chinese letters on the wrapper. Man, how'd that happen? And the Chinese brand is cheaper. So is the food in the big markets down here contaminated or not? Well, there's certainly some fertilizing and spraying going on, but nowhere near like up in the States. If you're really worried about that kind of stuff, you can do what so many gringo expats do. You just make a big old tropical garden out of your backyard. That's what I do. And my maintenance guy slash gardener tends to this stuff about once a week. He has his little tricks. He has a sack of abono chicken poop. And once a year, he picks up a little 10-pound sack of little white beads. Obviously, some kind of nitrogen-based chemical fertilizer. Once a year before the rainy season, he works it into the soil around the roots of most fruit trees. He says to give them a boost so they produce more fruit. So that's his method. And oddly enough, there's no pesticide use. Oh, and did I tell you, every time you see a little guy walking around with a machete, that's a guy who knows his gardening. And as for pesticides, I'm sure they use them here and there, but not prophylactically. However, if there's some kind of what they call a plaga, which is a plague of insects or fungus or whatever, well, they've got pesticides for that kind of stuff, but take it from me, it's only used as a last resort. Though sometimes you see, even in the big market, some fruits like papayas with a dust or a coating on them. You know they've been sprayed with something. So then, just ask. All right, enough said about that. Here's that boots on the ground story I was telling you about. Just about 2 weeks ago, I was in a really big hardware store. Remember, I'm way off the Gringo Tourist Trail and almost always am way off the Gringo Tourist Trail. Anyway, I'm walking around, love hardware stores, and I see this big, tall gringo guy in the plumbing aisle. First of all, that's something you rarely see off the Gringo Tourist Trail. A gringo, that is, which should be self-explanatory. And you know, I'm way past the point of going up to a gringo I might see and say, hey, what do you know, a fellow gringo, where are you from and all that? Nope, that's green gringo tourist trail stuff, you know. Practically every gringo you sit next to, hey, where are you from? What you doing down here? Anyway, I was going about my own business until I noticed the guy had a Chicago Cubs tattoo on his shoulder. I'm not kidding you. You know, the Cubbies, perpetual losers until what? This year? They finally won a pennant? First time in like 71 years? Come on, I'm from Chicago, so I had to talk to the guy. An extreme Cub fan, obviously from Chicago, and he said, yep. I said, oh man, Wrigley Field, that brings back memories. Turns out this guy's working for one of those do-gooder NGO groups, you know. The ones I say never to contribute to, the ones I make fun of all the time, the ones that have all those heartbreaking first world commercials saying, give your money to us and we'll improve the lives of the wretched poor. Yeah, I know how that is. It's 20% for the poor and 80% for the management. And I don't care how many emails I get from people saying, no, it's not like that, Johnny. Well, it is. I'm down here and I can prove it to you. However, I'm not going to jump into that toilet bowl with the guy I just met. Speaking of toilet bowls, that's why he was in the hardware store. Turns out he bought a nice house in the neighborhood, in a nice gated guarded subdivision. How's that happen when you're a selfless do-gooder working for an NGO? Obviously not living in a tin shack in the Pueblo with his constituents, but I digress as usual. Anyway, apparently even though his do-gooder NGO is building solar outhouses for Jesus or something like that, he hasn't learned much about construction himself. Because you see, his new house has a maid's quarters that wasn't quite finished off yet. It didn't have a sink and a toilet. And he was in that hardware store to get the toilet and the sink so the plumber can install it. So how's that strike you? A guy running a selfless NGO, living in an upscale gated guarded community with a maid's quarters. But so do I and most of my gringo friends, so scratch that. So anyway, this guy had picked out his sink and toilet, and the little hardware store attendant that was following around said, do you also want the ring to attach the inodoro, that's the toilet, to the floor, or just the empaque? That would be the thick wax seal you put down on the floor, and then you drop the toilet on it in order to make a nice tight seal with the sewer pipe when you flush. And with that, the gringo looked kind of flustered. He didn't know how to quite answer. And I jumped in to help him out. Why not? I said, down here, they install just the empaque, the big wax gasket. Then they shove the toilet on, and they use silicone caulk around the rim. In a couple hours, that hardens up nice and tight. But that's not really good enough, and it's against first world code. They do it down here all the time. Why? Because it saves the $10 you have to spend for the mounting ring. So get the mounting ring and the gasket. And the guy said, oh, I didn't know that. Thanks. And the guy, obviously not very knowledgeable or mechanically inclined. Don't know what he was doing running an NGO. Anyway, he looked at me like, is this it? This is all I need? I said, yeah, but wait. And I turned to the little helper guy and I said, this is a mounting ring for a 3-inch drain pipe. You have any 4-inch ones? And he looked at me funny and said, that's all you need? That's standard? And I said, no, a mounting for a 4-inch drain pipe is standard. So I said to the gringo, what you have to do now is you got to go back to your house and you got to take a tape measure and measure the opening of the floor drain for the toilet. See if it's 3 or 4 inches. The gringo said, okay, but he says it's standard. Then maybe I should just get the 3-inch one. And I said, buddy, if it's 3 inches, you're kind of screwed and in the same boat as 95% of everyone else here in Latin America. That means you won't be able to put your toilet paper down the toilet, which is why almost all Latin houses have a trash can where you put your toilet paper in. How disgusting, huh? He said, yeah, I know. I've seen it a million times. I said, you know, when a gringo builds a house down here, he almost never insists on 4-inch drain pipes because he doesn't know anything about sizing. Contractors will put in 3-inch, even 2-inch drain pipes because smaller pipes are cheaper and they can save money that way. Then I said to the helper, if he buys the 3-inch one now and it doesn't fit, can he bring it back and get the 4? He said, yeah, as long as he brings it back today. So the guy went away with the 3-inch one. And sure enough, a couple days later, I ran into the guy at the local Walmart. He shook his head and said, yep, 3 inches all right. I'm screwed. I said, no, not necessarily. You'd be really screwed if you had 2-inch pipes. I said, just go easy on the toilet paper and whatever else goes down that toilet. You know where I'm coming from. So there you have it. One of the things gringos and expats never know about until they finally bought or rented a house. So when you build a house, insist on first world codes, even though third world countries have adapted first world codes. Still, builders will cut corners all over the place, which is why you must make a visit to your building site every day or two or have a gringo in the know do it for you. Or make your architect go every couple days and inspect and insist. No material substitutes or replacements allowed. By the way, I've always thought that would be a great business opportunity for a gringo. Open up a little building and construction inspection site business. That would be especially useful to people who are looking to buy an existing property. And of course, if you're looking to buy one of those famous obras in Greece, you know, a project that was started and abandoned due to lack of funds, etc. By the way, more and more of those obras in Greece are showing up all over the place since we're right at the terminal stage of the biggest real estate bubble Latin America has ever seen.
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own Plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own Plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my 3 videos. See ya. Nos vemos.